Welcome to the Philip Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:12 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 21st. I thought that today I would kick off with the IPO index. Bloomberg used to have one of these. They discontinued it back in October, so this is the Renaissance IPO index. You can see clearly that the performance of IPOs tends to be rather heavily influenced by the outlook for global liquidity. You can see there was a very sharp pullback in 2015, and there was an even larger, or at least an equally sized pullback that we saw in 2018. So both of those occasions corresponded with higher high yield spreads, but then also just general fears about liquidity. But the difference on this occasion is that we have had an incredibly impressive rebound, considering that the index had pulled back so sharply. We've unwound just about all of the oversold condition and then some. So now a short-term overbought condition is evident, and it has room in which to consolidate and still be above the trend mean, but it is looking increasingly likely that there is going to be some form of consolidation. We can at least come up with some rationale for why that might be the case, considering that there are some very chunky IPOs that are going to be hitting the market in the first quarter. Potentially, Lyft is going to be the first of those. That'll be a multi-billion dollar IPO. Uber is going to follow really very quickly afterwards. So then that's also going to represent a challenge. The really big question that's sitting out there is just how much value is there to be found in these companies when they do eventually make it to IPO. They've stayed private for much longer than would have normally have been the case in regular circumstances. That has been one of the most distorting effects that quantitative easing has had. We can look at it from two different perspectives. The first, of course, is that we would never have really seen the kind of speculative interest in these kinds of new ventures, I think, without the massive provision of liquidity. The evolution of ride-hailing, for example, Airbnb, which is, I guess, accommodation sharing, reusable rockets from SpaceX or Blue Origin, for that matter. Then, of course, you've got the autonomous vehicle investment, electric vehicles, of course, from Tesla, and then you have the reusable rockets. So that's also been an incredible game changer for it's basically creating an entirely new sector. There was impossible to invest in space before. And arguably, it's still rather difficult to invest in space, and yet we have these multi-billion dollar startups that are not particularly worried about commercialization or indeed profits. So that is raising some very big questions. Is we are going to see an increasingly large number of these companies coming for IPO. They are going to command very high valuations. It's going to be obviously associated with an incredible amount of hype from the investment banks about just how wonderful these companies are. But the much bigger question is, what is their runway to creating a commercial venture? The one thing we certainly know is that the more of these companies that come to market, then it is going to introduce additional supply. And share buybacks have been really quite bullish and very impressive over the course of the last few weeks as the lockup following the earnings season has ended. So that has been one of the factors in the rebound we've seen on Wall Street. But I'm rather fearful that when we look at the valuation that some of these companies are going to command and the additional fact that they are going to jump straight into some of the primary stock market indices, well, I think there is certainly the potential that we're going to have some indigestion, and that could contribute to some pullback and consolidation. Well, the markets today were by and large a little bit easier. They have pulled back by about 2/3% on Wall Street. The S&P 500 remains right in the region of its sequence of lower rally highs. An increasingly large number of indices have broken their respective sequences of lower rally highs. But nonetheless, we are still at, I think, at a point where we're due some consolidation. And I'm very conscious of the fact that I've been saying that for the last 2 or 3 weeks. Of course, the higher the market has gone, the more the likelihood, or the closer we are to the next period of consolidation. Now, the much bigger question is that, are we going to get a consolidation that occurs above the trend mean, or are we going to see it go all the way back down to test the lows, or is it going to be somewhere in between? Well, I very strongly think that the outlook for just how much consolidation we're likely to get is going to be influenced by liquidity conditions. And liquidity conditions in China are probably more important than just about everywhere else. So the A-share index was in negative territory in here today, and it has rallied really rather impressively over the last 7 weeks. So it is potentially due some consolidation in the region of the trend mean. The most important thing it has done, however, has been to break the sequence of lower rally highs evident since the beginning of last year. That at least tells us that somebody has been willing to pay a new high for Chinese stocks. They have been very active in, I think, trying to withdraw liquidity from the shadow banking sector over the course of the last few years. Now they're trying to expand the tax base, so that's also an additional headwind for the economy. That increases rather than decreases the potential that we are going to see some form of stimulus to support the economy. When we look at the Baltic Dry Index, then what we're presented with has been a really quite a steep decline over the course of the last few months. That is representative of less demand for shipping. Certainly, one of the issues that contributed to the significant decline in the index, particularly in the period between 2012 and 2015, is that there was a lot of new ships hit the market. That is less of a factor in here today. That's already priced into the market. The slowing global growth environment has probably been more to do with this decline in the BDIY over the course of the last few months. Well, that signals really quite clearly that we are due some form of support for the global economy, and what happens in China is certainly going to be a, I think, an arbiter of just how much liquidity does come back into this market. Well, I continue to monitor the size of the global balance sheets for central banks on a daily basis. So far, it has held the breakout. It has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. That again, that was evident for all of last year, or at least from at least March of last year. As long as it's holding that sequence of higher reaction lows since November and holding, I think, really above the 19.4 trillion level, then we can conclude that the period of contraction in global liquidity is over, at least for the near term. So that should be a reasonable support for markets during any period of consolidation that might occur. Then, of course, if China is going to stimulate, then that is a significant tailwind for the kinds of economies that are rather reliant on the outlook for the Chinese economy. Well, chief among those is Australia, and the ASX 200 was in additional positive territory in here today. I think there are obviously the competing arguments in Australia about one, the resources sector, then also the outlook for the housing market. The Australian dollar was really quite volatile in here today, and it was prone to some rather acute bouts where you got an initial surge and then it couldn't hold it. Well, that I think really does help to highlight that there is a lot of speculation going on right now about what the outlook for interest rates is. The RBA's rate is at approximately 1.5%, and but how long that's going to hold on for is, I think, a rather big question. When we look at government bond yields, then they are coming right down to the lows we saw in 2016. This has been a very significant contraction in yields. I think it's quite likely that the RBA is going to have to cut interest rates. Australia has been able to avoid a recession for an awfully long time. The slowdown in the housing market is non-trivial. It is obviously representative of the slowing global economic environment globally. The outlook for Australia is going to be, I think, very closely tied to demand for commodities from China, and that's making it really quite reliant on China, in fact, engaging in stimulus. But if Australia goes to lower interest rates, then that is going to further weaken the Australian dollar. That's potentially really quite good news for the resources sector, since they predominantly have US dollar earnings. So that is going to, or I think that is quite likely behind the very significant breakout that we've had on the resources sector over the course of the last few weeks. Obviously, then, when we think about the gold miners, then that's also likely to be really a very significant tailwind for their nominal prices. So Evolution Mining, which has been one of the best performing of the gold miners, its reaction to date has been really quite modest. So that, I think, is an influence that we have as a result of the potential for additional downside on the Aussie dollar. European stocks have also been rather firm over the course of the last few weeks. Well, they've taken their cue both from the rebound we've had on Wall Street, but also obviously that Europe is really quite heavily influenced by what happens in terms of Chinese demand. I've written a bit today about the outlook for the electric vehicle market. The EIA has been upgrading its estimate for how much of the global market is going to be represented by electric vehicles over the course of the next decade. They've upped it to about 30%. Canaccord Genuity thinks it's going to be more like 50%. That's a significant difference. The outlook for lithium mining in particular is going to be very heavily influenced by just how successful the electric vehicle market is. There has been a substantial increase in the supply of lithium over the course of the last while. That's particularly true, for example, Orocobre is a relatively new producer. It's brought a lot of lithium back online. It's influenced by the altitude at which it's performing its extraction operations from brine. The evaporation that it's trying to do is heavily dependent on whether there are clouds or not. That has contributed to some volatility over the last few years. But the share has more than halved over the course of the last year, and it is stabilizing around this $3 area. We are also starting to see some support starting to come through in FMC. Of course, one of the issues with a lot of the companies that are characterized as lithium miners is that lithium doesn't really represent a whole pile of their actual balance sheets. So you can see that, for example, lithium at FMC only represents about 10% of its business. The rest is agricultural chemicals. When we look at Albemarle, for example, then we get a rather similar story. So I think that's a potential issue with looking at these shares. They are certainly priced as if they are major, or because of their major production of lithium, but they also have significant other businesses. So, for example, Albemarle, it's about 38%. That's probably much more representative of a lithium market. And it has a very similar pattern to what we've seen on Orocobre. So it has also stabilized. Well, what that is suggesting is that investors are willing to at least give the benefit of the doubt at the moment to some of the more bullish demand growth forecasts. There is plenty of lithium around right now, so its demand growth is going to have to stimulate, or I guess people believing in demand growth is going to be required to stimulate further upside. Cobalt prices have been falling, and I think it's no exaggeration to say accelerating lower. They've given up almost the entire bull market off the lows in 2016. And this, the speed of the decline and the complete absence of volatility during the day suggests that there is a complete absence of bids in the market. So there has been a mass liquidation out of cobalt, and the illiquidity of the market is really coming to the fore here. Well, I think the real death knell for the advance was the peaceful transition of power in Congo. So that removed a source of political support from, or at least a political risk from, the bullish environment. And then, of course, you have the fact that you have 8-to-1-to-1 battery chemistries that are increasingly being introduced. And that is where Tesla's world-beating range has been delivered. So we're going to see more of that being introduced. Well, that is not particularly bullish for cobalt, and it's not particularly bullish for cobalt miners either. So we're going to have to see some of those demand growth forecasts really starting to come good in order to start to boost demand for cobalt again. What I find particularly interesting is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of talk about the outlook for nickel, but nickel prices have been really quite firm, and they are now firming from the region of the trend mean. There is a distinct absence of nickel sulfide, which is the higher purity form of nickel that's demanded from the battery industry. The pig nickel that is developed by Chinese producers is not appropriate for the nickel price. Now, they are investing in trying to create additional or purifying the nickel that they have right now in order to make it appropriate for electric vehicles, but that is a risk for the industry, and the price should move higher, and particularly so since 8-to-1-to-1 ratios, well, it means 8 parts nickel to 1 part cobalt, versus 3-to-2-to-2, which is what has been the conventional ratio. That suggests that there's going to be a lot more nickel in future batteries. So that suggests that the future of electric vehicles is going to be much more nickel-oriented than cobalt-oriented. And then, of course, you have the additional fact that cobalt is a byproduct of both copper and nickel production, and copper is none too shabby either, and it has been breaking on the upside over the course of the last few sessions. So I think that's one of the more important facts that we have here, is that it's not simply that we have the argument for Chinese stimulus starting to pick up, but also that there is the influence of technological innovation on demand for industrial resources is also a significant factor. Now, gold prices were lower in here today, and not in a particularly dynamic manner. Down $15, I suppose, is the biggest decline though we have had since November. So that is at least suggesting that a pause is underway. We're right at the upper side of the range. One thing that we have certainly been conditioned to expect from gold is volatility, that the best time to buy metals is following a pullback, and we haven't had a pullback in a while. So I think it is likely that we are now going to get some consolidation. The sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact. That need not necessarily remain the case. We could see a reversion back towards the mean. That could shave approximately another $70 off the price. That could also offer an area of support. We're definitely going to have to see an clear upward dynamic in order to really suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, where we did see a, I think, a more or a bigger pullback today was in silver. And silver was down 40 cents in here today, so it has not quite been able to hold this move up to a new recovery high posted yesterday. So now I think investors are going to be looking to see if the low around 1550 holds. The region of the trend mean right now is in the region of 1540, but silver has not been leading on the upside. The clear leader on the upside has been palladium. And palladium was also in negative territory in here today. It had been accelerating higher. It was down $20 in here today, although it was off its lows. $1,500 is a big psychological level, so it is a natural area where we might anticipate some resistance coming through and at least some consolidation and the potential for an unwind of the short-term overbought condition. Then, when we look at the gold mining index, it got right up to that 180 area, which represented the peak from back in July, and it was in negative territory in here today. I think that we are likely to get some consolidation in the precious metal markets. That is likely to set up the next buying opportunity if we are, in fact, in a recovery scenario. There is a clear argument for why that might be the case. I think with the move towards fiscal stimulus just about everywhere, then that does set up the conditions for stealth inflation and also for negative real interest rates. Well, the fact that you're getting fiscal stimulus at the same time that wage demand growth is picking up just about everywhere, then that is a set of conditions that should be beneficial for the gold price. If we do get more stimulative action, then that should also be better for oil prices. Well, oil was in somewhat negative territory in here today. It's right in the region of the trend mean, so it is equally likely to get some pause and consolidation in here. We have had an incredibly impressive rebound over the course of the last 2 months, so it's, I think, really quite likely that we are going to get some pause and consolidation. That has been a growing possibility over the course of the last few weeks, and I think there is the real possibility that it is beginning now. So that's likely to be a potential or to have a potential influence on the government bond yields. So the yield today was in more positive territory. Well, the fact that we've started to see a loss of downward momentum on the yield over the course of the last few weeks has at least been pricing in the potential that the next move by central banks is going to be for a rate hike, excuse me, for a rate cut. When we look at the treasury markets, then what we're presented with is a really rather significant breakout. We have had just simply one upward dynamic followed by a downward dynamic over the course of the last few weeks. It's really been almost up one day and down the next. There is a very clear triangular pattern with a sequence of lower rally highs and higher reaction lows. the most recent dynamic is downwards. Obviously, if we see additional downward moves, then that will break the sequence of higher reaction lows, and it will greatly increase the potential that a retest of 121 is going to be seen. The clear bearish argument for treasuries is that there is an awful lot of additional supply going to start coming through, that there is going to have to be even additional issuance because of the fiscal deficit. And those are, I think, some of the more bearish characteristics. Obviously, the clearest bullish characteristic would be is I think clearly that we get a slowing economic environment, which could contribute to lower interest rates. But if we do start to get stimulus, and most particularly from China, then that is likely to act as a reflation trade, which would potentially start to elongate the expectations for that rate cut that people have been pricing in. Well, that's not especially bullish for treasuries. So that's a potential scenario, at least, for why we might see some weakness coming through. But with the triangular pattern in evidence, then if it's going to remain within this pattern, then we're going to see a rally over the course of the next few days. I rather think that we are going to be in for a volatile period, because if we do see some consolidation on the stock market, then that should act as a tailwind for bond prices. But it wouldn't be the first time in the course of the last few months where we have seen both the stock market and the bond market moving in exactly the same direction, which is generally a testament to some risk-off environment. Now, the VIX index had broken below 15 yesterday, so the fact that it is in a little bit more positive territory in here today suggests that we are getting a bit more two-way action in terms of the stock market activity right now. I think that risks have increased that we are going to get some consolidation, particularly following what has been a very impressive advance over the course of the last 2 months. I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.